Okay, we'll take 20 minutes. Well, I've been reading from my collection called Distance, and I call it Distance because, I call it Distance because I'm interested in the relationship between people in time and space. In time, because we're all connected to the people who have gone before us, and we will be connected to the people who come after us. And in space, because of the changes that physical distance brings about. I was born in Limerick, and my mom and dad are from Limerick. My mom was a soda cake, if anybody knows what that is, and she was very proud of that fact. The story goes that at the siege of Limerick, the women stood beside the men and fought off the Williamites. And when they ran out of stones to throw, they threw soda cakes. Apparently they have the same consistency. My father was born in Parnell Street, which is very close to the railway station, which the street is already knocked down and widened and everything, but we lived overhead that until 1952, and then we moved to the brand new estate of Ballinanty Beg, which is just on the outskirts of Limerick. And that was the first time we moved any distance at all. And it was a big deal for my mom and dad. And it changes the dynamics of their lives and our lives as children. And my first point is called Moving. Joe Busoli sat on the cart beside my four-year-old self, while my mother and father walked to the measured clip of his clopped horse. It must have been an easy pull. A few sticks of furniture, some bric-a-brac, and Aunt Babby's china with its caravan of animals. As we crossed Thomond Bridge, the city turned away from us and slipped into her evening dress. Single cars droned by, bumblebees in September. Then, coming to a hill, we saw the thousand boxes of the new estate and the house that was to be ours, its emptiness, concrete. As we came down the unworn road, its black tar barely solid under the wheels, Joe put the reins into my electrified hands. In her eagerness, my mother ran ahead, keys flashing and 100-watt solace in her fist. The black eyes of the front room suddenly blazed. From its open window, a young girl called to us, our names ringing new in the darkness. For years I thought it was some kind of law that if you came from Limerick you had to have your holidays in Kilkee.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because that's where everybody in Limerick went for their holidays, so we saw the same people that we saw every day in Limerick then all down in Kilkee. So my earliest memories of Kilkee is being a very small boy on the West Clare Railway and the train from Limerick. He was 6 years old when some American broke Aunt Lily's heart and she took him down to the seaside at Kilkee. As they stood on the brow of George's head, he felt the Atlantic thump the cliffs and the shock vibrate the ground under his crept soles. A spray of needles goosed his skin and washerwoman seagulls screamed over the suds. The wind began to lift him into the air. He looked down. Aunt Lily was pulling him back to earth, holding his ankle in the jeweled grip of his hand. In the fairground, he pretended not to see her, winking at the men to let him win. They ate candy floss and periwinkles and then had lunch in the Bayview Hotel. He was sick. In the evening, his head on Aunt Lily's lap, they lay among the grey-haired dunes, listening to the whistle of the last train home. He put his finger into the ring of the sun and pulled it down the sky until it entered the water with sharp, protesting shouts of light. I'm very interested in the sea and the effects the sea has on people and why people need to be near the sea. Now, when we stand by the sea, there is a touch of melancholy in the air, as if we were longing for something intangible, something perhaps born of where we came from, as old as time itself. This poem appeared in an anthology called Poems Underwater. As you can imagine, it was very hard to write. I hope it gives you some idea of what I'm talking about. Caron Lechine. I'm only beginning to understand, floundering here in this house, hard against the sea. Here, where we should have been breakfast for each other, you have left the kettle spitting on the ring and circling in the coral cup, tea, black as a bear. You are not in your garden of shells, nor down where the strawberries nibble the cold Atlantic. You're still not home when morning shakes the light-fingered leaves in the sticky hedge of maple where the hare hides her high, awkward feet. Later, I'll go down to that seaweed nest where the rocks are as smooth as dragon eggs, where the pounded spray scatters salt on the skin you shed, where you opened the wavy roof of the ocean and slink back to your own. When John Millington Synge came to the Aran Islands, he had no other intention but to observe their simple way of life. But as soon as we touch the lives of others, come close, or interact in any way, we change things forever. The physical distance Synge travelled was from Dublin, but he was also moving through time. The Islands. Imagine yourself, John Millington Synge, come to this place with private watch and ticking clock, where they barely can tell one day from another. Where every sunrise the women appear, walking through nettles and maidenhair to the sea, lifting their madder-stained petticoats, red with secrets. Where the currocks spin and dance in the wind, and the men often give themselves away to death. Imagine watching their slow fall from the roof of the sea down to the gardens of the deep, never learning to swim against fate. Imagine leaping sharp thoracic fossils until your shoes, handmade in Dublin, are in tiny shreds so that they cut you a pair of pantootes that need seeping overnight to regain their soft and clawing primeval agility. Imagine yourself on the beach, the stars 2 feet above your head, banging together. The dark jumping towards you as if it had waited all day for you to come. Imagine yourself gone, far from here, yet each night they wind up in your old room, watching the clock you left behind, slicing down the seconds one by one. At one time, the distance between families was bridged by a letter. These letters were few and far between, and when they came, they were treated with reverence. Like a blind dentist, my mother searches in the red mouth of her purse, while our irregular postman waits at the door. "That's not necessary, Mrs. Carey," he says stoically, but he doesn't move. His hands are blue, but not from the cold. In the sleety rain, the Christmas post is weeping ink. He places the letter of from Hounslow precisely at the center of their transaction. The loose head of the English Queen held only by a single artery of gum. My mother ignores the generous wad of the envelope until she's pinched together the correct pennies of gratitude. She's finding it hard to concentrate, worrying that the expensive and delicate warmth of the house will escape and roll around outside. She keeps the door pulled against her back with the hook of her foot, still sorting half pennies from truckety bits. "For the season that's in it." She hands the postman a shilling. So that no doubt of her generosity remains in either mind, she presses the coin in his palm, fixing it home like a tack. She doesn't open the letter, but brings it straight away to the dining room and places it at the head of the table, where my father will see it as soon as he comes home. My mom got very sick towards the end of her life, and basically she lived at the bottom of the house. She couldn't get up the stairs anymore, so we got together and we started seeing about a stair lift for her. But it just reminded me how much we take everything for granted, and from the bottom of a mountain to the top of a mountain, or from the bottom of a stairs to the top of the stairs, can be just as high. This poem was inspired by those events. Upstairs. Lying on the bed with my mother, wearing my father's alpaca overcoat, here upstairs where the air is cold and the blue painted radiators are singing and the cold cream is liquefying on the dressing table, my mother can no longer take the cold. My father was my age when he died. I looked like him, everyone says. I looked so like him, everyone says. I had to think when she asked me to wear the coat. For a moment, I had to think about it like I didn't know what she meant. It was then she called me Danny. Too many times, Danny, she called me. "Please, Danny," she said. So I put on the coat. She wants to lie down the pain for a moment, just for a moment, on the pink candle wick spread, upstairs where her body will not take her. So I lift her in my arms. So light. Oh, Sarah, you are so light. I carry her up to an age before one is old, up where Sarah and Danny once moved in the fluid of young bodies and slept hot to the touch. We pretend to sleep, Danny and me, though I sweat in the coat and I don't feel well, where I stay still. For Sarah's sake, I am still. The afternoon seagulls are mad at something in the garden. I should investigate because they sound so near and real and mad, but I can't, because she will not let go of his hand. After a while, released into the darkness, I get up. I see very little by the nibbling light of the Sacred Heart. Sarah. Softly. Sarah. Quietly. Sarah. My father's voice, and she says nothing. She says nothing, leaving me afraid that everything might be said and done and said. She has taken all of the cold of the earth into herself. For hundreds of years, I worked as an engineering sales. For hundreds of years, I worked in engineering sales. As soon as my son David was old enough, he began asking me what exactly I did when I went down the country. One day, I brought him along. fathers and sons. You already had that judging look that boys of 7 or 8 wear. You've killed a bird, Daddy. In the streets of Kilkenny, a sparrow hung from the mouth of our car. I removed its tiny body. I'm sorry, I said. This wasn't the memory I wanted for you. This was the day to show you my work, to look inside that box of sharpened knives. In the engineering shop, your face blazed in wonder, row and row of huge machines, motors roaring, chained by electric cables. While the machinists showed off their skills, the boss waded across a river of noise. We crashed out into the sunshine, and you laughed at the surprise of silence. For lunch, we went brazenly to McDonald's. Don't tell your mother, or I'm dead. Our drive home was all smiles. You ran to your mother at the door. Mommy, Daddy killed a bird, he said.
Thank you very much.